Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Net Zero Investor podcast. I'm Atharva Deshmukh, the head of research here at Net Zero Investor. Today's episode is a little different in that we're not talking about CO2 emissions, and we're not speaking with an investor. Today, we have an engineer on the show with a message for investors. Now, to explain why, let me begin with a little bit of a backstory. In March 2024, there was a satellite called MethaneSat, which was launched. The idea was to collect detailed information about methane emissions. Then, unfortunately, in June this year, the satellite lost contact. But the data it had collected is quite useful to investors. Now, around the same time, the Methane Finance Working Group published new guidance on how labeled debt instruments hold the key to methane abatement or financing methane abatement. Climate Bonds Initiative is part of that working group. And joining me on the show today is Anna Diaz, a mechanical engineer who is also the Global Energy Transition Lead at Climate Bonds Initiative. Anna, thank you for joining us. Welcome to the podcast and congratulations on being the first engineer on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, Atharva. This is an honor. And thank you for having me.
My pleasure. So I guess we can just start out with a little bit of an introduction. As I said, this is the first time we've had somebody with a technical background speaking to our investor audience. Could you tell us more about your journey as an engineer and your role now at Climate Bonds Initiative?
My journey as an engineer has been deeply rooted in the energy sector from the very beginning. I started with a degree, mechanical engineer at the German University, followed by a PhD in energy engineering for the University of Pisa in Italy. So that academic foundation gave me a strong technical lens through which I have approached the energy transition throughout my whole career. Over the past 2 decades, I have worked across research, industry, and policy. I spent several years in the Energy Research Institution in Germany, Italy, and the US before moving into the industrial renewable energy sector, where I lead the global R&D initiative and serve as an executive director of technology for a multinational company, helping bring innovation like the first concentrated solar power and the second generation biofuel from lab to market. Later that, I joined the European Commission, the Joint Research Center, where I worked as a senior energy officer providing science-based and technical advice on climate and energy to policymakers. Right now, as you very well mentioned, I am the Global Energy Transition Lead at the Climate Bonds Initiative. What that really means is I help to make sure that the standards we develop for sustainable finance are grounded in solid technical expertise and 1.5 aligned. So we want investors and governments to feel confident that when they are putting money into climate solution, it is actually driving real change. So my job is to connect the dot between science, technology, and finance to help move capital toward net zero solution. Over the past year and a half, I have also been working in the Methane Financial Working Group that you already mentioned. It has been a fascinating experience bringing together experts from organizations like the Environmental Defense Fund, RMI, and Columbia University Center of Global Energy Policy, among others. Together, we are exploring how capital market can be used to accelerate methane emission reductions.
Great. So usually in investor circles, I know that conversations over climate change sometimes tend to focus on carbon dioxide. Could you tell us more about how methane contributes to climate change, and especially in comparison to carbon dioxide?
Yeah, sure. Well, you're totally right. Methane is often overshadowed by carbon dioxide in climate discussion, but it's actually responsible for over 30% of current global warming. It has 80 times more global warming potential than carbon dioxide over a 20-year period, meaning, and this is so important, that cutting methane emissions can deliver rapid short-term climate benefit that we are so needed. And like carbon dioxide, methane doesn't linger in the atmosphere for centuries. It stays only for average a decade. So reduction today can slow warming within a decade, which, as we can easily understand, it is a critical point to address the urgent climate challenge we all are facing. To give you a number, scientists estimate that cutting methane emission could prevent up to 0.5 degrees of warming by the end of the century. 0.5 degrees is a lot, making one of the most impactful levers we have for climate actions.
And so in terms of now understanding the problem a little bit more, can you tell us about the scale of this challenge? What's the level of methane emissions we have and where do we need to get to maybe by 2030? That's something you should think investors might want to know about.
Yeah, this is also a great question. Thank you. So as I say, methane is responsible for about a third of the warming we are experiencing today. So it's a huge part of the climate challenge and of course a huge part of the climate solution. What striking is that despite all the attention in recent years, overall methane levels are still rising in the atmosphere and faster than CO2. This is important. The good news is that methane presents one of the most significant opportunities for near-term climate action. Over 160 countries have signed the Global Methane Pledges with the aim of reducing emissions by at least 30% by 2030 compared to 2020 levels. In pathways consistent with 1.5, however, Paris alignment cuts should be between 45 and 75% are needed in this decade. The scale of the challenge is enormous, as you can imagine, but so is the opportunity. Rapid methane reduction can actually slow global warming in the near term, which gives us a critical window while we work on deeper CO2 cuts. This is really buying us time. And here is the key takeaway. According to the science, cutting methane isn't optional. It is mandatory if we want a real shot at staying within the 1.5 target. It buys us time, and time is everything in climate action. For investors, that means methane abatement isn't just a climate priority. It's quickly becoming a space of growing policy pressure and opportunities. We are seeing more alignment between science, finance, and regulation, and that opens the door for meaningful impact and smart investment.
For investors who are looking at this conversation going, where does this methane problem sit in my portfolio? Where does it sit in the companies that my fund invests in? Could you tell us more about where these emissions are coming from in terms of sectors? Is this an oil and gas problem?
It depends heavily on the sector you are exposed to, but let me develop this answer. Methane emissions come mainly from three big sources. Number one is agriculture. About 40% of the total human-caused methane is coming from agricultural sector. That is livestock like cows and sheep and rice production. If you are invested in food and agribusiness, that exposure is real. Number two is energy, roughly 35%. This is where oil and gas and coal come in. Methane leakages, venting and flooding across the whole value chains for drilling and transportation pipeline to LNG terminals that together with coal mines make the energy sector a major hotspot. So yes, for funds with oil and gas holding, this is a huge part of the story. And last but not least, there is a number three, is waste, about 20% of the emission. Landfill and wastewater treatment release methane as organic matter breakdown. Utilities and waste management company in your portfolio could carry exposures here. That is the global picture, of course, but it's really varied depending on the region. So no methane isn't just an oil and gas issue, but it is the sector where investors are seeing the faster growing risk and also the clearest opportunity. First, methane is the product of the gas industry, but also because leaks can be measured, fixed, and regulated. Agriculture is tougher to tackle, but it is increasing on policymakers' radar too. For investors, the takeaway is methane exposure is hiding in more sectors than you think. And how companies manage it could be the difference between regulatory risk and competitive advantage.
Moving now to the solution. So we've talked about how this is mandatory to do and this can buy us time. So in terms of solutions, I was looking into this and it's often the case that methane abatement is referred to sometimes as the low-hanging fruit. Would you agree with that categorization?
Well, you hear that a lot. You're right. Methane abatement being called the low-hanging fruit, but it comes with important caveats. Let me deep a bit on that. It is true that compared to more dispersed sources like livestock, farming, methane leakages in oil and gas operation are often concentrated and easier to detect and address. This is very intuitive. That makes the technical side of abatement relatively straightforward. In fact, as noted in the guidance, the technology is already mature for about 80% of known mitigation opportunities. So the the technology is there, ready, and it's not very expensive. Also, since methane is the product of the gas industry, and this is very important, it's not the product of the agriculture, it's not product of waste, it's exactly the product of the gas industry, it capture and commercialization are more viable. But the challenge lies in the economics, of course. The revenues from abatement are not comparable to those from opening a new wells, for example. That's why financial assistance and innovative debt structuring, like the mechanism outlined in the guidance for including methane abatement in oil and gas debt structuring, are essential to make this project attractive and scalable. So yes, it is a low-hanging fruit in terms of feasibility, but unlocking its full potential requires financial and policy support.
Just to pick up on one of the points you mentioned, you say the tech is ready and it's not very expensive. So this is going to be my follow-up question, which is in terms of the commercially available technologies. Could you give us an example of a solution that's out there that's where the tech is ready, where the cost has come down? Could you give us an example to help understand that?
Sure, there are proven technologies already available today. In fact, within the Methane Financial Working Group, we have developed the guidance document that includes a taxonomy of activity that result in net methane emission reduction. Let me walk you through three of the most important ones. First, leak detection and repair, also known as LDAR. Companies use sensors, drones, even satellites, as you mentioned at the introduction of this podcast, to regularly scan equipment, valves, compressor, pipelines, and then fix leaks quickly. It is one of the most cost-effective measures because the gas that's captured can often be sold, so you get into the commercialization pathway. Second, very important, reducing venting and flaring. Instead of letting gas escape or burn off in flares, companies can install systems to capture the gas and either use in on-site or bring it to the market. The economics are straightforward. What used to be waste become a product with value. The Global Flaring and Methane Reduction Partnership, led by the World Bank, support technical and financial assistance to help companies, especially NOx, national oil companies, implement flaring reduction strategies at zero routine flaring goals aligned with the Paris Agreement and SDGs from the UN. Third, very intuitive also, is upgrading infrastructure. This includes replacing or modernizing all equipment, reinforcing pipeline and sealing abandoned wells that continue to leak methane. This project can be more capital intensive, but they deliver lasting reductions.
Right. And so in that conversation about solutions, I think there's an important question to be raised about measurement. And in financial markets, I know there's this old adage that says what cannot be measured cannot be addressed. So could you tell us more about how is methane measured? How do investors access that information?
You are absolutely right. And with methane, measurement are the foundation for both action and investment. The problem is that for years, most companies reported methane using generic engineering factors, average leaks rate for certain equipment, etc. But leading bodies like the International Energy Agency and the UN Environmental Program International Methane Emission Observatory have shown that this method underestimates reality. The IEA's Global Methane Tracker, for example, finds that actually oil and gas emissions are about 70%, 70, higher than what government officially report. This is huge. That is why the industry and regulators should move toward direct measurement. A key initiative here is the OGMP, Oil and Gas Methane Partnership 2.0 program, led by the United Nations Environmental Program and the Climate and Clear Air Coalition. It is now the gold standard for methane reporting, with over 100 companies representing more than 35% of global oil and gas production, committing to measure emissions directly across all segments and to report them transparently. For investors, this is crucial. Credible measurement means credible finance. It is a company can show reduction verified under framework like OGMP 2.0, then lenders can tie bonds, coupons, or loans margins directly to those KPIs. That transforms methane reporting from a compliance exercise into a financial advantage. This OGMP is included in the guidance that we have developed.
And so just picking up on that guidance you mentioned, there's an interesting point in there about how historically methane abatement projects were not, rarely financed through label debt. And sometimes oil and gas companies had to dip into internal finances, for example, internal capital markets, to actually finance these projects. So coming from our audience perspective, what is the view of institutional investors? What is the role of institutional investors, in your view, in methane abatement? How can they contribute?
Well, that is true. Historically, methane mitigation projects in the oil and gas sector have struggled to attract level financing. Companies often have to fund this initiative internally, competing with more profitable ventures like drilling, for example. As a result, even when there is a genuine interest in abatement, companies face scarce decisions from investors. To truly unlock this market, we need clear incentives, robust data, and of course, accountability mechanisms that give investors confidence their capital will translate into real emission reductions. That's where initiatives like the recent guidance developed by the Methane Financial Working Group come in place. We now have a framework that enables banks, asset manager, and institutional investor to structure financial that drives measurable climate impact. This isn't just about issuing bonds with attractive levels. It's about embedding methane performance into the very DNA of financial instruments.
That brings us to the last segment of our show, which for me is often the most interesting one. So I like to call this the NZI elevator pitch. So the idea is where we ask guests to summarize their views on the topic of the day. So in this case, Anna, imagine you were in an elevator with the chief investment officer of a large pension fund, and you have until the end of that elevator ride to convince the CIO that investors should care about methane. What would you say?
I will say that first, reducing methane from oil and gas is one of the biggest and fastest ways to cut global warming. If that's not enough, today the sector emits around 80 million tons of methane each year, and levels really haven't got down much over the last decade. In fact, new satellite data shows emissions are often higher than what is officially reported. Looking ahead, the scale of the challenge is huge, but so is the opportunity. To stay on a 1.5 degree pathway, the International Energy Agency said oil and gas methane emissions need to fall by about 75% by 2030, tomorrow. Over 160 countries have signed the global methane pledges, committed already to a 30% cut from 2020 levels. And there is also a global push to eliminate routine flaring by 2030. For investors, the key takeaway is that pressure to act on methane is only going to intensify. Companies that move early on abatement will be better positioned, while those that don't will face growing regulatory and financial risk.
Great. So that was the end of the elevator and also the end of this episode. Anna, thank you for joining us. And to our listeners, thank you for listening in. The idea behind this was to bring Anna's technical expertise into a conversation about methane that needs to be had more and more within the investor circles. So I hope this episode has contributed a little in that direction. So Anna, I appreciate you sharing your time and your insights on the episode. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. This was an honor. Thank you.